I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Come along and join us as we climb aboard a classic trolley for an exploration of Tulsa, from urban enclaves to the heart of Black Wall Street. Grant Baumgartner, Director of Experience Tulsa, leads the revealing tour of Tulsa. Afterwards, we'll meet up with Jeffrey Tannenhouse, operator of Tulsa Tours, and Jackie Price with Price Family Properties. They take us on a walkabout to discover Tulsa's iconic Art Deco and other historic buildings in the heart of downtown.
I'm going where the water tastes like wine. I'm going where the water tastes like wine.
I'm Grant Baumgartner. I'm the director of Experience Tulsa. We are a partner of the George Kaiser Family Foundation that exists to basically ensure that visiting folks, whether they're looking at relocating to Tulsa, whether they're looking at hiring in Tulsa, or whether they're just folks like yourself interested in learning about Tulsa, we try to make sure that they have the best experience possible while here, learn about the history, see the potential and possibility, and really get a sense of the past, present, and future of the city of Tulsa. So we are on the trolley, the old Tulsa trolley that we often use for these tours, just to kind of get a fun historic glance at the city. So when I was growing up, everything you see here was just a giant front lawn. About 40 acres of the park was just one property with a home set far, far back. Yeah, it's really changed a lot. Tulsa has a massive cycling culture. One of the biggest events of the year is a fun cycling race that happens here in early June and a party that ensues around it called Tulsa Tough. Over 80 miles of uninterrupted cycling trails along the riverfront, and there's also a 600-acre wildlife preserve called Turkey Mountain that has just gotten a huge investment for mountain biking trails, hiking, etc. So we just went underneath the park. The park is right above us. So there are children playing, there's foliage, all sorts of stuff above us. Coming up on our right is our skate park, our BMX pump track, sports courts and basketball courts. And what we're gonna go by right now, this is the Children's Science and Math Museum. This is the Discovery Lab coming up right there.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's great. Kids love it.
Like corporate headquarters for kids.
Exactly. So we're in the historic neighborhood of Tulsa now. Tulsa is built on a grid system. So we're on 31st Street. Every 10 streets is a mile, right? So we are 3 miles south of 1st Street in the center of downtown. You're looking at Tulsa traffic right now. This is a typical day of traffic. I know it may not translate to radio, but there's really no traffic in the city of Tulsa. It's remarkable. People always say you can get everywhere in the city or 15 minutes or less.
And that includes rush hour.
This is rush hour. People are getting to work. No, there's really no traffic in the city. It's one of the biggest things that helps, you know, encourage people to relocate. So prior to working at Experience Tulsa, I actually worked for Tulsa Remote when we were starting that program up, which is our work incentive program where remote workers can receive $10,000, free co-working space, and a large community of other remote workers
if they relocate here.
If they agree to relocate to Tulsa, keep doing the job they're doing for 1 year, and in exchange they receive $10,000 and all those other perks. So while I was there, we moved over 2,000 people. They've moved closer to 3,000 people today with a retention rate of over 80%. It's been highly successful, and I think one of the many draws has been ease of living, lack of traffic, low cost of living, accessibility, and then of course assets that you just saw, the gathering place, the river park system. It's a city where you don't surrender as many of the big city amenities, but you gain a lot of small town access.
A little bit of a demographics of where you sourced your remote workers from.
Sure. So our remote workers at Tulsa Remote, they came from all over the country. Their highest density were areas that had high density of population, right? So most of our folks, or a plurality, came from states like Texas, Florida, New York, California, just because that's where a lot of Americans live. I think we've had every single state represented in Tulsa Remote at this point, a lot of major cities, but also rural places as well. We've had recently nationalized citizens. We've had expats who moved back to the country from Mexico City or Portugal or all over. So we're taking a right now, and we're heading towards Philbrook Museum. This street, though, can give you a little bit of a sense kind of Tulsa's history, right? So early Tulsa is an oil town. We exist as really the first oil boom town in American history. Most of the American oil industry was either built in Tulsa or you know, companies would later go on to consume companies built in Tulsa. You think of Sunoco, Sinclair, Phillips 66, you think of Conoco. These were all founded in or around Tulsa in the early 1900s. Really, the comparison that best describes early Tulsa, I think, to a city today is Tulsa in the teens and 20s, minus the political connections, was the Dubai of today. It was very similar to what Dubai is today. In 1900, there were 1,300 people who lived in Tulsa. By 1930, once oil was discovered, there was 140,000. The city grew over 100x in that 30-year period. This is Philbrook. So Philbrook was the private residence of Waite Phillips. Waite Phillips, founder of Phillips Petroleum, Phillips 66, also interestingly founder of the Boy Scouts. Troop 1 of the Boy Scouts is here in Tulsa, and they go to a ranch in New Mexico called Philmont Ranch. If it's got Phil in front of it, it was probably Waite Phillips who put it there. We'll take this left. Philbrook is now an art museum. It was donated by Waite Phillips, actually, after about 4 years of living there. You'll see when you tour with the Prices, they own now the building that he moved into, the Philcade. But Philbrook is an incredible artistic asset for the city. It has remarkable grounds, it is an Italian villa, and then has incredible arts. You know, Tulsa is a bastion of artists and the arts and culture here in the state of Oklahoma and also in the region. We have an opera, we have a ballet, we have incredible art museums. We'll go straight and take a right. And it's an incredibly welcoming community as well. Our artist community has a remarkably robust and strong LGBTQIA community, which is growing here in Tulsa. I'll give you an example here a little bit later of some incredible work that one of our Tulsa Artist Fellows is currently doing. But yeah, Philbrook is a great asset. Right here, kind of in the middle of Midtown. We'll take a right. We'll be passing soon my childhood piano teacher's home. I know that'll probably make the cut. And we're going to kind of just make our way, meander back onto Peoria and then take a left. So here's some kind of the historic homes. And one of the things that I think people really enjoy about Tulsa in relocating was that Tulsa doesn't really have a set architectural style. Outside of the fact that our downtown has the highest density of Art Deco, other than South Beach, Miami, anywhere in the United States, other than that Art Deco style, you know, Tulsa architecturally embraced many different styles. You'll find incredible California craftsman style homes. You'll find Gothic style homes. Then we'll stay on Peoria for a while.
It's hard to translate this neighborhood into words, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, Tulsa has a lot of unique and historic neighborhoods. One of the things that our Tulsa Remoters really found in relocating was there's a house for everyone, right? Whatever your style, your preference, maybe you want old, maybe you want new, maybe you want big, maybe you want small. And I guarantee you, for 80%+ of our remote workers and other people, if you are listening and you are in any city in America larger than Tulsa, I promise you our houses are cheaper here per square foot.
We're just going through like a multi-millionaire Beverly Hills type neighborhood. What would be the least expensive cool house you could buy in this
neighborhood? There would be homes in there for $400,000, ranging up to multi-million. I mean, some of those homes will be the massive homes. No, I mean, you will find plenty of homes in that neighborhood we were just in for $500,000.
Wow. Yeah. You couldn't get one car garage where we live.
So funny. When I remember, but when I was at Tulsa Remote, I did an interview once with a guy, you know, interviewing to be part of the program, and he was calling from Berkeley, California. And of course, I had, you know, all his information in front of me, and I knew, I could see that he had a salary of $120,000. And I said, "Why are you looking to relocate to Tulsa?" And he said, "Man, I'm just tired of living with roommates." I said, "Living with roommates? Oh my gosh, you come live in a palace here." I just think that we in Tulsa often forget. I always tell people that Tulsa's housing market is not cheap. It makes sense. When I see a $500,000 home in Tulsa, it looks like a $500,000 home.
To you.
To me. But when I see $1 million home in San Francisco, I go, "Man, that looks like a $150,000 home to me." And so I just tell people it makes sense. So where we are right now, again, we're 2 miles now south of downtown. And of course, Tulsa goes for miles in a lot of different directions, also spans the river. But really the story of Tulsa is growing slightly north and then growing south for a long period of time. So most of Tulsa is south and east of downtown. There is some west and some north as well. Tulsa, interestingly, if we want to get more in the history, because one of the most unique things about Tulsa is we basically exist at the intersection of three different nations. Right, of the Muscogee Creek Nation, of the Osage Nation, and of the Cherokee Nation. Oklahoma is incredibly unique in that 10% of our population are members of various Indian tribes. And so Tulsa is at the end of the Trail of Tears, right? So Tulsa comes from a Muscogee Creek word. The Muscogee Creek, of course, were relocated from the southeast. It actually shares the same Muscogee Creek route as Tallahassee, Florida. both of which came from the Creek tribe. The Creek settled here at the end of the Trail of Tears and founded the city of Tulsa. And so our roots go very much back to those tribal roots. And in fact, much of the story of Black Wall Street and Greenwood, which we'll discuss when we drive by there, has deep connections to tribal history in a really fascinating way. I always tell people that to me, Tulsa is the most American city, and I mean that with all of the ingenuity and industry and growth, but also a lot of the baggage that comes with that American history as well. All of the big questions and conflicts that happen in the American experience have happened here in Tulsa in really interesting ways. So as a history buff, I love it. By the way, we're passing my house. I live in the duplex we're about to pass here. 1,000-square-foot duplex right there with the Tulsa flag flying. I pay $500 a month for that. Take a left on 15.
You alluded to your being enamored with the history here. What first comes to mind?
Well, you know, Tulsa's history and Oklahoma's history as a whole doesn't go back as far as a lot of American history, right? Tulsa's founded in the late 1890s as a city. We don't become a state until 1908. We're the third to last continental state. What comes to mind is the ambiguity of a lot of it. I don't know where Tulsa is supposed to be regionally. Are we Midwest? Are we Southwest? Are we Southern? We have inklings of all those different cultures. Of course, the tribal history comes to mind. Of course, Black Wall Street probably comes to mind most prominently for many of your listeners, and the history of the Greenwood District. To me, what most comes to mind when I think of Tulsa is the Magic City. That was a term that was actually used to describe Tulsa in its early history. It was called the Magic City because it had appeared from nowhere, but I really think the term best applies to a lot of the history of Tulsa. The creation of Black Wall Street and one of the wealthiest black-owned entrepreneurial districts in America. The creation of the oil industry and the energy industry in America. The creation of all this Art Deco architecture, which you'll see in a moment. When I think Tulsa, I think of the Magic City, and I think of kind of the crossroads of America all intersecting here at once. But I'm a little biased.
How did you get here?
Well, so my folks came to Tulsa from Kansas in the early 1900s, and around 1903, my great-great-grandfather started a grocery store here. That was five generations ago, and in fact, we'll drive over my great-great-grandmother's home, which was torn down for a highway system. That's how we got here and have been here ever since.
Did you ever leave?
I did. I left for 4 years in college.
Where'd you go?
I went to Northwestern University in Evanston, right outside of Chicago, and I loved it. You know, in true Okie fashion, I'll quote Will Rogers, I've never met a city that I didn't like, and I love Chicago. But I knew once I graduated that even though I love Chicago and a lot of my friends were going to New York and D.C., that Tulsa is where I really wanted to live.
What drew you back?
What drew me back was the capacity to make an impact, and I really think that that's what drives people here, whether it's an entrepreneurial impact or a civic impact. Tulsa is this perfect in-between size where it's big enough to where your voice is amplified, but it's small enough to where it's still heard. And I think that's unique. You know, I could have lived in Chicago for 40 years before I could really see my fingerprints on the city. I always felt like a spectator living in bigger cities. I was watching the city around me, but I wasn't a part of it. Here in Tulsa, I really feel a part of the city. Tulsa's a place where you can make an impact, and you can be here for just a couple of years and see your fingerprints on the part of the city that you know, you're most passionate about. I could point to you dozens of folks who you'd say, gosh, you seem like you've been here forever. And they go, I've been here for 3 years. It's a welcoming place, and it's a place where you can make an impact, but you don't have to give up big city amenities. There's lots of small town communities that have great community feel, but they're not going to have a Bruce Springsteen concert for $17, which is what I paid for my ticket to see Bruce here a few months ago.
Wow.
Now, I can't promise that always, but I got lucky.
When you returned from Northwestern, what did you do when you landed here? How did you get going?
Well, when I was at Northwestern, I got the most useful degree I could get, a philosophy degree. So I was just eminently employable. No, I returned and I knew I wanted to make an impact, and there was fascinating work being done at the George Kaiser Family Foundation. So I came and I worked as a glorified intern, a fellow for GKFF. And it happened to be right when we were starting Tulsa Remote, so I kind of got sent off to Tulsa Remote, and that began my journey working kind of on the economic development side of the city.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's been a blast. By the way, this is 11th Street, but you know it better as Route 66. So if you take a right, Route 66, take a right, you go to Chicago, take a left, you go to L.A. eventually. This has really started to be renovated deeply as well. There's another great foundation here in Tulsa that's really focusing on the Mother Road corridor. Tulsa is the most philanthropic city in America per capita, so you will find lots of different folks, obviously the Gathering Place is a testament to that, doing lots of different work. And there, of course, is downtown to your left, where we're kind of looping back in.
The Paradox, it has a small town feel, but what is it, a million population?
The metro is a million. Yeah, the city limit's about 415,000, and the metro is about a million, just over. Yeah, it is a paradox. Well, I always say, big city amenities, small town feel.
Even outside of the downtown commercial core with the high rises, it has a small neighborhood feel.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about Tulsa is that if you want to live in what might feel like a suburban neighborhood, you can live three blocks outside of downtown, and you will live on a street that looks quite suburban and quaint, but you could ride your bike or walk to Art Deco skyscrapers. I also always like to stress to folks, and I think a lot of our Tulsa remoters were surprised to discover this, is that Tulsa is not necessarily what you may hear nationally, you know, in terms of it's a very welcoming city. It's a very diverse city from both our native populations to our African-American population to our East Asian population. We actually have the largest Burmese population anywhere outside of Myanmar, interestingly. But, you know, Tulsa has the sixth largest equality center in the United States. We have a thriving LGBTQIA population.
Center? It's a physical center?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Talk to us about that.
The Equality Center does a lot of great work here in Tulsa, providing both a space for events and awareness when it comes to issues that are important to the queer community. We just had a massive fundraiser, our Red Ribbon Gala this year, which raises money for AIDS and other sexually transmitted diseases. I think they raised over $1 million this year with their fundraiser event. I mean, just a massive support from the community. Some of the great buildings that you'll see downtown, my two favorite Art Deco buildings in downtown Tulsa were designed by a famous Tulsa architect by the name of Bruce Goff. Bruce Goff is kind of an icon of the queer community. He was the chair of OU's architecture department, but he was removed when it was discovered he was gay. There's a lot of work being done right now by Tulsa's queer community to repurpose his work, something that one of our Tulsa artist fellows here in town does every year now called Goff Fest, which is a celebration both of his architecture and then, you know, architecture in general in the city and also just kind of the arts and community happening here.
What's been done to honor him? Is there like a center?
Yeah, so a lot of the work that this individual is doing, his name's Carl Jones, is trying to regain his archives. I'll show you two of his iconic buildings. He was once called by Frank Lloyd Wright the only American architect with any real talent.
Wow.
Oh, high praise. So as we're entering downtown, when we go over this bridge here, downtown is surrounded by a square highway system called the Interdispersal Loop, which was built during urban renewal and really spelled kind of the second death of downtown. We were hit very hard with urban renewal policies that deeply affected the Greenwood community and really all of downtown. For years, downtown became a commuter community. There was no residences, there were no restaurants, there were no bars that were open after lunchtime. That's all drastically changed in the last decade.
Isn't it incredible that supposedly, looking back the lens of time, that urban renewal was a greater good, it was great vision.
And it was popular. It was wildly popular. And it's bizarre, and you look back at some of the buildings we lost. I mean, in that same time, people thought that Art Deco was rather gaudy. We lost a lot of great Art Deco buildings, and there was not that many people were up in arms about it at the time. And now, of course, we'd give anything to have those buildings back. We just passed Lowood. I do want to point out, Tulsa has an incredible arts and culture scene, but also a great food scene. You may have heard of the James Beard Awards. Tulsa actually was recently nominated for 7 James Beard Awards, which is actually more than the city of Austin. But who's counting? Also, Oklahoma City was only nominated for 3. What you see behind us, this was a giant field that I used to play Ultimate Frisbee in. When I was a kid, and I was born in 1996 to date myself, there were fewer than 500 individuals who lived downtown. There weren't any units in which to live downtown. That number is closer to 5,000 now, and our downtown's at about a 98% occupancy rate, so there is a huge demand. You'll see lots of new construction happening, and also lots of old office buildings being repurposed into residential. There's a big demand for folks coming and living downtown in a way that when I was growing up, there simply wasn't.
So live-work is viral now.
Very much so. As we cross the tracks here, we're still downtown. We are entering the historic Greenwood District. We are on Greenwood Avenue, which is the famous main street for which the district was named. Also, interestingly, for any kind of funk music fans, the Gap Band, you may have heard of with the hit You Dropped the Bomb on Me, along with many others, they're from Tulsa, the Wilson Brothers. And Gap actually stands for Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, which are the three main thoroughfares of historically black Tulsa. We're at the intersection of Greenwood and Archer. This can kind of be seen as a unofficial kind of central point of the modern Greenwood District. What you're looking at is historic Greenwood. These are all buildings that were built after the massacre. Of course, the massacre occurs in 1921. Quite literally everything in the district is destroyed. Over 10,000 people displaced, at least 300 people murdered, and every building burned to the ground. There are walls of certain buildings that still remain, but there are no fully standing structures from before the massacre. In fact, if you look at this building, the Williams building on the corner, you'll see on the top it says 1922. Was built 1 year after, right? Immediately Greenwood rebuilds. You'll also see here a really interesting second part of the Greenwood story, which is, of course, that Greenwood's most prosperous years, actually many of them come after the massacre. What does Greenwood in a second time is that highway you see right there, right? The highway system, as it did in many places in America, cuts through predominantly neighborhoods of color. This is certainly one of them. It cuts right down Main Street. I mean, it completely bisects it. And does Greenwood in a second time. It is now having its third renaissance. And what you see behind you is some new build that's just come up. The first black-owned physician office in Greenwood in over 50 years. It's just been put right there, Juno Care. You're looking right here at Greenwood Rising. And we'll continue straight, Tommy, and we'll take a right if we can. You're looking at Greenwood Rising, which was built as the Legacy Center to commemorate the history, past, present, and future of Greenwood before, during, and after the race massacre. To commemorate the centennial, which of course happened in 2021. What we're looking at here, I want you to see this mural. That is what this view looked like. A little bit about the history of Greenwood that I told you, I'd kind of mentioned the intersection, right? It's a intensely American story, right? So as I said, Tulsa is the ending point for many on the Trail of Tears. Well, many of those tribes brought with them on that trail their slaves. The five civilized tribes were known as the five civilized tribes because they held slaves. When those tribes relocated, they brought their slaves. When those slaves were eventually freed, they were freed into Choctaw, Chickasaw, Cherokee, Osage citizenship. They became what was known as freedmen. And when the state and federal government eventually forced the tribes to allot the land that they had been owning in commune to all of their citizens, those black freedmen received allotments as well, 160-acre allotments. Now, much of that land was given to the tribes because it was rocky and slanted and thought to be poor for farming. Well, turns out it had a lot of oil under it. And so a lot of the story of Tulsa, which is the oil boom, affected Tulsans of all shapes, colors, and creeds. A lot of Native American Tulsans became vastly wealthy overnight, as well as many black Tulsans. And so oil is the driver of the wealth of Greenwood, which then would go on to, of course, have many great hotels and restaurants and bars. And what made Greenwood unique in the time of segregation, of course, every city had a black district, but this one was wholly owned by its black residents, right? Everything from the taxi service was owned by black Tulsans. So a huge amount of wealth here. And what's exciting now is what's happening in Greenwood today. I mean, Greenwood is experiencing another renaissance, another reimagining, and there is a huge amount of black entrepreneurship returning to the Greenwood District and creating kind of the Greenwood of tomorrow. Here we see our baseball stadium. This is One Oak Field. It's where our minor league soccer team and our AA affiliate of the LA Dodgers, the Drillers, play. This was a parking lot when I left for college. It is now an apartment complex. This was in a parking lot when I left for college. It is now a commercial office building and restaurant. Every single building you see in the Arts District, with about four, maybe five exceptions, when I was born, was either a warehouse, a parking lot, or vacant building. Everything you see here. What you see here is a fun building. This is the Archer Building. It has a jazz club in the basement. It has Magic City Books, which is Tulsa's literary coalition, which interestingly on its board has such notable authors as Stephen King, Neil Gaiman, Ann Patchett, so some really big heavy hitters. And then on the second floor here is actually a series of artist studios for a program we have called Tulsa Artist Fellows. So at any given time, there's 30 to 50 artists who are here on two-year fellowships just to create art in the city of Tulsa. Their studios are up there. Amongst them right now is Joy Harjo, who is the poet laureate of the United States, actually three-term poet laureate. She's a fascinating woman and great saxophone player. Many folks are unaware. But we have incredible artists there who are kind of just here from all over. Some are local, many have come from all over the world. We're coming up on one of those James Beard nominated restaurants here in Amelia's, a great, great place. I think there's a great photo probably here. This is Woody Guthrie. This is the Woody Guthrie Center. So let's talk a little bit how this district revitalized. And one of the things I think that's unique about Tulsa is it's one of these few cities where everybody is pulling in the same direction. The city, the chamber, the private interests, as well as the foundation interests. And the Arts District is really a testament to all of those entities coming together and helping to renovate a district of Tulsa. This was a parking lot when I was growing up. It is now the Guthrie Green. The George Kaiser Family Foundation purchased it and turned it into a public park that's actually powered by a large geothermal well, interestingly. We also came to acquire this building and purchase the archives of Woody Guthrie. Woody Guthrie, of course, the famous American folk singer who wrote This Land Is Your Land. He is from Okemo, Oklahoma, which is just south of here.
Oh, how far away?
About 45 minutes. There you see Woody with his famous guitar on which he would always write, "This machine kills fascists." We actually use that line for our electric bike share system in the city. It's called the This Machine system. So you'll see that around. So we love Woody. And Woody, of course, is the largest musical inspiration to a lesser-known folk singer named Bob Dylan. And so we also came to acquire Dylan's archives several years ago. He wanted them to be near Woody, and he wanted them to be on native land. And so just down there, we'll drive by in a moment, is the Bob Dylan Center. Bob Dylan never lived here, no. Bob Dylan is from Hibbings, Minnesota, another Minnesotan from the Iron Range.
He did come to visit.
Yes, he's played in Tulsa many, many times. He had deep connections to another famous Tulsa musician, Leon Russell. You'll see Tulsa had this incredible music history that goes back to Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, who originated Western Swing, and then goes through J.J. Cale and Leon Russell, who created the Tulsa Sound. This is artists ranging from George Harrison to Eric Clapton, who lived here momentarily. So there's a lot of that. Here we have Old Main Street. That building, the L. Fox Building, it's actually built in 1906. It's older than the state. Isn't that interesting? 1907 is statehood. That's 1906. These buildings are very early oil boom days. This is all prairie architecture. This is what you might expect to find in a lot of the main streets of lots of small towns in Oklahoma. It changed drastically as the oil boom grew. This is the Oklahoma Pop Museum, which is opening, and Kane's Ballroom. Kane's Ballroom is a famous music venue here. It was an old Western Swing dance hall where Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys played and broadcast every Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, known as the house that Bob built. It's now a great music venue. It's also one of only, I think, four locations in the United States where the Sex Pistols ever played. Sid Vicious punched a hole in the wall that's now framed. But all different types of music's played there. The LA Times actually recently voted it the third best place to hear live music in America. So here's a better view of the Guthrie Green. You'll see the stage. You'll see a new restaurant that's opening up here. It's just a public space. It's also equipped with Wi-Fi, so folks can work remotely from it. So this district has, of course, changed dramatically. You hear about a lot of places that are undergoing a renaissance or something new is being built, but it maybe isn't necessarily have a lot of public support. One thing that's unique about Tulsa is I think there's overwhelming public support for a lot of the projects that have happened because downtown Tulsa in particular had bottomed out so hard from urban renewal that when something new comes in here, it's not displacing something old. It's being built on something that's been a parking lot for years or has been a vacant building for 50 years or a warehouse space. And so unlike in maybe Brooklyn, you know, when I talk to my cousin who lives in Brooklyn, something new gets built, it's inherently displacing something old and beloved. Here, that's very much not the case. There is Tulsa Union Depot, great Art Deco building. Over here is the Performing Arts Center. This is where our ballet, our opera, and our symphony all perform. And now we're going to go on Boston Avenue. Tulsa has a main street that's actually called Main Street, but our real main street is Boston Avenue. This is where the American oil industry was founded.
Is this still the center for American oil?
There's still a huge energy contingency here. It's a little bit more midstream now, meaning it's a lot of transportation and pipeline companies. There is still a large energy presence here, but many of our oil corporates actually relocated to Houston in the 80s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And we're now on Boston Avenue. That's the tallest building in Tulsa. That is the Williams Tower. That is basically a one-half replica of the World Trade Center. It's the same architect. Here, you have the 320 South Boston building, also known as the First National Exchange Bank. This is the first bank in America that was basically solely existed to finance oil exploration. One thing I'd love for you to notice, it's actually wrapped up over there. You can't see it well, but at some point, you should take a photo of the Tulsa flag. The Tulsa flag is the perfect synopsis of the city of Tulsa. It was created from a groundswell of public support, grassroots campaign led by two locals and one guy who had just moved here. It was embraced by the city, has every aspect of it, represents a piece of the city, and it is now the official flag of the city, making us one of only really two or three American cities that have a flag that is public access, that can be designed by anybody, as opposed to just a municipal seal. And it's been largely embraced. You'll see it everywhere. We will hop out here, though, and grab your stuff.
To learn more about your world.
To learn more about Experience Tulsa, you can go to our website, experiencetulsa.org. But really, I would encourage your listeners to, in any capacity, explore Tulsa. If you've never been here, I guarantee you it's worth a visit. If you love food, arts, culture, music, there's something for you here. And you can be the cool friend who said, hey, have you heard about Tulsa? You know, so I encourage anyone to just give it a try. My name is Grant Bumgarner. I've been the director of Experience Tulsa, and this has been a delight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian, I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Yeah. We'll see you here.
My name is Jeffrey Tannenhaus, and we are in my office of Tulsa Tours in downtown Tulsa, the Deco District.
Yeah. Tell us how you got here. I heard myth, legend, and rumor that you rolled in on a bicycle from New York City.
Not just any bicycle, but a city bike, a rental bike from New York City that I had paid for.
You didn't tell me you were taking it out of the area.
No, I didn't. They charged my credit card associated with my membership, and I kept going with their bike.
The bike, you took it all across the country.
All the way to Santa Monica.
Tell us about the journey, highlights, a real interesting interlude in Tulsa.
So the goal of my trip was to find a more livable city. I was tired with my career and in New York in general, and I wasn't sure what else was out there. I love to bike commute, and so I used that commuter bike to go across America and check out other cities that I would have never considered. What I found was that some of the cities in the middle of the country had a better work-life balance. And one in particular, Tulsa, I felt a different chemistry here with the people that I met and the opportunity that was arising here.
Did you ever return the bike?
No, I didn't. I was going to. They weren't interested in it or anything to do with me. And so since I had already paid for it, I kept it. It's in my apartment here.
We should probably put it up on the wall down here.
There was someone in Los Angeles involved with the Metro Transportation that had wanted to buy the bicycle to use in his art gallery in downtown L.A., but I held on to it.
So were there any other contenders Midwest that tempted you?
I really enjoyed Cincinnati. And not Midwest, but Pittsburgh. Those were the three contenders that I really enjoyed. Ultimately, I picked Tulsa because it had the biggest upside, the biggest potential for development, and they were thirsty for ideas. And I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I wanted to do something in placemaking, what I ended up doing.
So your academic background is geography, correct?
Do you have a degree in geography?
But here you are, architectural historian in us.
Yes, I do Art Deco and architecture walking tours of downtown Tulsa, even though I am not from Oklahoma and am not an architect.
What intrigued Art Deco?
The sense of going into a new decade, which became the Roaring Twenties, just society coming out of a pandemic and a world war, and how that affected design and architecture, especially in Europe and in France. And then that design is exported across the world and even to Tulsa, Oklahoma. As Tulsa was growing rapidly in the 1920s, the population doubled between 1920 and 30. They were building in the latest style, which happened to be Art Deco.
The streamlined era, classic.
Both the zigzag era first, and then goes into the streamline era.
What a game changer in architecture.
Yeah, and now people come to Tulsa specifically because they have heard we have all this Art Deco architecture, and I'm able to interpret it for them and show them what came before Art Deco, what came after Art Deco, why Art Deco came about, and why Tulsa has more than its fair share of these buildings.
And I understand you actually lost probably half of your Art Deco specimen, urban renewal.
That's correct, yes. Like many cities around the country, they were tearing down buildings in the 60s through the 90s to modernize their look and feel of their cities. And unfortunately, that happened here too in Tulsa.
You have Tulsa Tours. walking tours?
Yes, they are walking tours. I am actually true to my brand and still do not have a motor vehicle. I've lived in Tulsa now 7 years without a car. And so we do walking tours. The downtown is very compact and there's a wide variety of architectural styles. So you actually don't need a vehicle to get a full dose of architecture in Art Deco.
Beyond Art Deco, what are some of the more intriguing architectural specimens?
You mean like other...
Post, pre, you know, just different architectural styles beyond Art Deco.
Across the street from here, so we're in an Art Deco building called the Philcade. The Phil Tower, across the street, was built by the same oil man, Waite Phillips, is an example of neo-Gothic architecture, and taking visitors into this building, they feel like they've stepped into Europe. Like, it's a fan-vaulted, cathedral-like ceiling. Not what you would expect in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, another example, one of your favorites.
How about there's a neoclassical building next to the Phil Tower. It's called the Atlas Life Building. It was built 100 years ago for Tulsa's first life insurance company, and it has an interesting shape to it, like an upside-down T. That's actually not representative of Tulsa, but rather the pandemic-influenced architecture of needing plenty of space between their neighbors so that plenty of sunlight and air circulation could go around the central tower.
It's a great flu pandemic.
Yes, exactly. And so that was built in 1922, and now it's a hotel.
I love their logo, the signage up front.
Yep, and the company's has Atlas holding up the world, and the motto of the insurance company was the strength to carry any load.
Of Art Deco, what's your favorite here in town and architects who had the vision that created them?
My favorite building here would be the Pythian Building, and it's a wonderful example of the zigzag Roaring 20s Art Deco, but it was a casualty of the Great Depression in that the full vision of the building was never completed because the two oil men who were building it ran out of money because they were heavily invested in the stock market. And so what we have here is from 1930, just the first three floors, but they were building the lobby as if it were going to be the Roaring 30s. And so that is my favorite because of the rich ornamentation in the lobby. So we're now in the Phil Tower. This was the first office building that Waite Phillips built, and this is in the neo-Gothic style with a fan-vaulted ceiling made of Italian travertine limestone. The whole building was built as an office building, and Waite Phillips had the penthouse for his office. And down here, we're now, this is in the basement, we're approaching the tunnel. Waite Phillips actually built two tunnels to connect the Phil Tower with the Philcade building, which we were already in, for his safety and convenience, as he was so wealthy that he was a target for kidnappers and for ransom. So he built these tunnels, one of which we can access here, and it has some pretty good sound effects to go with this original door. So now we're in the very echoey tunnel that goes underneath 5th Street and connects Waite Phillips' two office buildings. And this is quite a delight for visitors and locals on our tunnel tours that we do.
So back in the day, did his helpers and staff also utilize it?
Yes, this was really built for his convenience and his safety, and his entourage would use it as well to get between the two buildings and access the larger basement in the Philcade building.
Are we going through the other door or no?
The other door is locked, so we go back out the way we came.
Okay.
Monsters.
Tulsa is a really underestimated city, and we're working with various partners downtown, including new arrivals like myself, to make this a more fun place to live and work. And there's just tremendous history here, both good and bad. Now we're trying to grapple with that and educate visitors and locals.
How long do your tours take?
They take about an hour and a half, or sometimes longer, because I end up talking a lot.
They meet here, meet up?
Yes, we meet at this location, which is the Philcade Building. It's an Art Deco landmark, and I have a little storefront right here on one of the main commercial streets in Tulsa. I think this just goes to show that I wouldn't have this opportunity here if I didn't have a good relationship with the landlord, and for them giving me a chance to realize my dreams of being a shopkeeper on a major street downtown, I don't think I would be able to do this in really any city of this size.
And how do you glean your customers? How do they find you?
They find me online through different internet searches. And I have a pretty robust website, and good reviews always help. So we get a lot of interested people visiting Tulsa, or Tulsans who have visitors and they're looking for somebody to show them the Art Deco. They find me. We are in the lobby of the Art Deco Philcade. This was one of Tulsa's first shopping malls. The bottom floor had different stores for office workers. This was an office building in the oil capital of the world heyday, and it was done in an Art Deco style with geometric patterns on the ceiling, bronze filigree chandeliers that were actually made locally by craftsmen imported from Europe. We have a terrazzo floor with geometric patterns on it, and then in some of the former storefronts inside here, there is an oil exhibit that I put on about how Tulsa became the oil capital of the world.
Why did the retail go away?
After World War II, with suburbanization, there was a push for moving out to the outer areas and the suburbs, and retail followed where people were moving to. So you had an outdoor shopping mall that opened called Utica Square in the 50s, and eventually the retail left downtown and actually has not come back.
But maybe on the cusp with your return of live-work housing downtown.
Yes, absolutely. There are now about 5,000 people that live in the downtown core of Tulsa, and various groups are renovating old commercial buildings to house residents that are moving from the coast, from more expensive cities. There are some Art Deco artifacts also on display in the lobby of this building. So right outside of the Philcade is the Phil Tower, built by the same oil man, Waite Phillips, whose older brothers founded Phillips Petroleum. And the Phil Tower across the street was built a little bit earlier in an older style called Neo-Gothic. So this has the fan-vaulted ceilings that were made from travertine from Italy.
And was there residence in there? Was that all offices?
No, it was all offices when it was built in 1928. It opened. It was the tallest building in the state for a brief period of time.
Okay, so then where do we go on the tour?
We can take you over to the Tulsa Club, which was one of Tulsa's first Art Deco buildings from 1927. And then across the street, there's development happening, residential development happening over here, including a Streamline Art Deco building called Arco. And right next to the Phil Tower building is an Art Deco landmark called the Tulsa Club. This opened in 1927 in the zigzag Art Deco style. It was a joint partnership between the Chamber of Commerce and something called the Tulsa Club, which was the highest society club for white men at the time. And they collaborated on creating this stunning modern building in 1927. And over time, the Art Deco style faded from favor, and the Chamber of Commerce moved out, and Tulsa lost its crown as the oil capital of the world, and eventually the club closed. The building was abandoned for decades. Fortunately, it was rescued with historic tax credits and renovated into a boutique hotel called the Tulsa Club Hotel, affiliated with Hilton. We've got development, residential development happening in the downtown core, including a more streamlined Art Deco building that was built for a pipeline company in 1949-1950 that is now being turned into rental apartments.
One more crowning glory of your tour.
Okay. Joined by Jackie Price, the president of Price Family Properties, that has been doing a great job in renovating this historic building stock downtown into residential buildings.
Hi.
Tell us about what you're involved in, what you're most proud of.
We own and operate 15 buildings in downtown Tulsa, the majority of which are Art Deco. Over the past almost 7 years now, they were traditionally office space, and we've been moving the office users out and converting them into apartments. We are just a couple months away from our fourth conversion in an Art Deco building.
Probably some infrastructure struggles, huh, on repurpose, reuse.
We have amazing architects that we work with, and they are able to find every nook and cranny and make them into wonderful apartments, but they are definitely, you know, all different shapes and sizes depending on what layout works in the old building.
Yeah, you have office building, there's no tub shower.
A lot of core drilling.
Yeah. Tell us about what you're most proud of downtown Tulsa, and right now, kind of the rebirth.
You know, I moved back 7 years ago, and every day it just keeps getting better and better with more people moving, living downtown, more people wanting to be downtown to work. It's where the action is. The retail users are increasing daily. I'm most proud of the fact that we are keeping these amazing, beautiful, historic buildings and restoring them to what I believe was probably their original intent, with just excitement, beauty, and kind of breathing a new life into them.
You're also breathing a new life into downtown Tulsa, making it literal live work. So there's a dynamism here now in the evening.
Our motto really is live, work, and play, and we live by it. And there are so many people who are down here living, working, and playing. And like I said, more retailers, restaurants, bars. It's incredible how much fun you can have down here.
The stats right now are about, 5,000 live downtown. What do you guys, your family, envision, best case, 10 years from now?
I think there's already new development that's happening from the ground up. We're more on the preservation side, restoring the buildings, but there's ground up development that is so exciting. People from out of state are investing here. They see the growth potential. It's just really exciting to be a part of. But 10 years from now, it's going to be so vibrant with so many more things to do.
Maybe at least double.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh yeah, it'll be doubled. Mark my word.
To learn more.
PriceFamilyProperties.com. And my name is Jackie Price.
To learn more about your world.
It's Tulsa.tours. And my name is Jeffrey Tannenhaus, the founder and lead tour guide of Tulsa Tours.
Thank you so much. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Tulsa, Oklahoma. We'll see you here.
This road of feeling bad. I'm going down this road of feeling bad, bad, bad. Ain't gonna be treated this way.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Takes a $10 shoe to fit my feet. Takes a $10 shoe to fit my feet. Takes a $10 shoe to fit my feet. Lord, Lord.